You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Look, I'll share it with you, but you know, you got to be careful these days. I'll preface it just by saying that when I write any lyrics, I make an absolute point of crossing the line. Like I've got a moral compass of my own, and I do my best to turn that moral compass off and write down stuff that is unpleasant and uncomfortable.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope you had a glorious weekend. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is Montreal's premier metal promoter. They put on a bunch of amazing shows all year long, but they also put on one of North America's best metal festivals, and that's the absolute truth. I have played festivals all across the globe, and Heavy Montreal is up there with the best of them. Some of the amazing events they got coming up in the next year is Deftones with Gojira, Sepultura with Sacred Reich, Crowbar, and Art of Shock. Coming up real soon, there's the Ginger Suicide Silence Tour that's coming through MTELUS. And they have just announced they got Static X coming through with Fear Factory and Dope. If you'd like to grab some tickets for these events, you can do that via the link in the description of this podcast. I am very, very stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'd also like you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there is someone in your life that enjoys metal and craft beer, please tell them about Vox and Hops. You could tell them that there are over 290 episodes with some of the world's best metal musicians for them to go back and listen to. If you were to encourage one of your friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, on today's episode, I am with Sam Bean, the vocalist of Werewolves. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 296.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm with Sam Bean of Werewolves, the Berserker, the Antichrist Imperium, the Senseless, and he's just recently jumped into doing some live vocals for the Amenta. Sam, how are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Thanks, man. Yourself?
I'm good. I've been looking forward to this chat. We sort of set this up because I snuck my way onto the brand new Werewolves album, and I'm just so damn excited that we did this. And I was like, we should talk to each other.
We should.
Besides the fact of just performing together, even though we've never really met. So a beautiful thing that came out of COVID was a bunch of cool projects and connecting with people. And this is one of them for me. So I'm happy that we're actually having a conversation face to face via the internet.
Yeah, dude. Look, yeah, thanks heaps for like doing that spot of vocals for us. You know, it's really hard because I want to boast all about it and tell everyone everything about that little particular project. And yeah, God, if we could play it, that'd be even better. But I think we've still got many months to go before that one comes out, so I have to keep zipped. It sucks so much.
I'm excited about it. Let's just dance into the dirty part of this. How did you cope with the glorious year that is now behind us, that is still lingering and is still giving you some hassles? How are you coping with 2020?
Well, 2020, I actually like 2020. I'm a complete bastard. Look, I'm not heartless enough to realize, yeah, everyone else is doing it pretty tough. And it was a worldwide disaster, but I had a great year. I got a couple of albums out. Work didn't get interrupted for me at all. There was recordings galore. Like, yeah, I even squeezed a bit of travel in as well. Yeah, everything was good for me. It sucked for everyone else. I felt bad for him, but like, I had a good time.
Well, that's a good way of looking at things.
This year is a little bit of a different story. I'm going to admit that.
Take me there. What is worse about this year than the previous year?
You know, I could understand like getting locked down last year as a little bit of a novelty. And I was kind of thinking, you know, 6 months, a year, that's long enough for any country really to pull their thumb out and get their act together and work out how to, especially if you're a big island like we are, work out how you're going to deal with incoming cases, which is how we get all our variants and all our infections. But no, we seem to have been afflicted with some extremely inept leadership. So we don't have quarantine facilities as such. They just stick them in hotels and rooms next to each other. Like, there's no real, you know, as a country, we're really good at, like, you know, the idea of she'll be right, mate. Like, you know, just let things work themselves out. And this is kind of something where, no, you really need to have your shit squared. Yeah, it's infuriating. So I think everyone here has completely had the shits by now. And especially, like, right now, you know what it's like. When you're in winter, COVID breaks loose. When you're in summer, it seems to kind of go away a little bit, like the flu. So we're having the same period you guys would have been having in January or whatever. We're looking at the Northern Hemisphere and just going, look at them. They're all open and partying, getting stuff done. And we're down in here, like, you know, in our socks again, like eating, you know, Wheaties out of a tin for, like, the second week straight. Yeah, so, yeah, we're a little bit over it. You know, we're kind of like going, the vaccination's the way out of this. When's that going to bloody happen? And, you know, half the country is kind of like, no, I'm not into that. And then half the political class is like, what, do we need vaccinations? So
that's a heavy, heavy 2021 for you there, Sam. Let's lighten the mood a little bit and talk about what Vox and Hops is all about. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. Now, what beer do you have on your side that we're going to be sharing virtually?
I'll wave it at you, like, over the camera here. I've got a Pirate Life, and it's pale ale. Now, I'll tell you why I chose this. There's two reasons why I chose this one. First one is there was supposed to be a big metal festival at the Pirate Life Brewing Company in Adelaide, like, next weekend. Yeah. Obviously, that has been cancelled. But, yeah, I really like the brewing company. Like, their facilities, yeah, I should be talking about their beer. It's actually the facilities I freaking love. It's in this kind of, like, old suburb everyone hates in this city. And they've, you know, they've gone from a craft beer sort of like a brewing outlet, like that started in 2014, just a couple of guys over from Western Australia. And they've now taken over this big industrial estate. So they're still kind of like a craft outfit in that they like just pump out heaps of varieties of stuff, like, you know, each month. But now they've got the facilities of a major brewing company. They've upgraded, like, I think 3 or 4 years ago. So not only do they have all these, like, massive new facilities, so they can just, like, really push out some massive amounts of brew. They've also got this, it's just fantastic to visit. Like, summers here get really hot, and they've got this massive outdoor area, like, with sprinklers, like, misters everywhere. And
amazing.
Got lights up, and it's like half factory, half, like, you know, concentration camp, death by beer kind of, like, outfit with, like, food trucks and a bit of misting. And it's pretty cozy in winter as well. There's a local metal guy here, Jason North, plays for a band called Truth Corroded, and he organizes the festivals here. And, yeah, he teed that one up. When I heard it was at the Brewing Company, I was just like, what a brilliant, brilliant place to do it. And, of course, like, you know, they're going to go triple taps down all day long. So I was just like, that is the perfect place for a fest. Hopefully you can reschedule that, you know, again for another time. Anyway, I'm going to rip this sucker open just while I tell you the second reason why I've gone this. Oh, yeah, it's 10 a.m.
I appreciate it.
Now that first sip's down, I hate beer. I fucking hate beer. Anyway, look, I'm not good with yeast, like mild yeast allergies. So this is why I'm drinking a pale ale, because anything heavier than that, I'll be wheezing and sneezing and drooling all over the place.
Really?
Yeah. Most people, like, get a little bit of bloated, get a little bit pink when they have some brews and stuff. For me, that's just like times 10. So a lot of the craft beers, they've passed me by. First off, just it's not fun for me to drink.
No.
I'm more of a spirits kind of guy. But the second one is that, apart from the wheezing, my palate just has problems with craft beers. Like all those kind of floral hoppy flavors to people just taste like dishwater and soapy, like suds and stuff to me. It's like getting my mouth washed out with a bar of soap, which, to be honest, I'm probably about a few decades overdue. So, yeah, for me, it's about it's about spirits. It's about the good medicine and not so much the beer.
Wow. See, I've spoken to a lot of people. You were the first person to talk to me about getting that affected from yeast and beer in general. That's extremely interesting.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. I'm going to dig deeper into that, but first I'll introduce my brew, which is something that you'd most definitely hate, probably, aside from the name. This is Cryptopsy and Kanawaki Brewing's brand new collab. We have a song called Cold Hate, Warm Blood, of course. This is Cold Haze, Warm Blood, and it's a double New England with blood orange. It was brewed as a part of Vox and Hops' Brutal North America, where I dropped 22 brews across North America at the end of June, 8.5% ABV, kicking to teeth, but it's really smooth because of the blood orange juice that they put into it. I want to hear about your early drinking and when you realized that this is what was happening to you, because a lot of, you know, when it's new to you, you wouldn't necessarily understand that the side effects of what is happening to you is because of the beer versus just you're getting drunk.
Yeah. Look, like most Australians, probably started drinking in my late teens. That's not like most Australians. Most Australians start drinking in their early teens. So I was a bit of a late bloomer. Mm-hmm. And back then, you know, because I'm 46 years old, so we're talking what, 30 years ago or so. There were no craft beers, and the beer import scene was really, it was yet to start up around the world. So, yeah, I was starting off on the very basic beers, which fortunately for me were the pale ales. So there's stuff like, and everyone's going to laugh their heads off here, but Victoria Bitter, VB, which funnily enough is still my beer of preference. Like if I've got to have one, people are like, why are you drinking that shit? And I'm just like, you don't understand. It is so plain Jane that I can get it down the hatch and it's an enjoyable experience. So, yeah, as I got older, I'd noticed that if I was drinking with friends, like I was a lightweight. You know, everyone would be on the beers and I'd, you know, tap out at about two and everyone else just seemed to be able to grind on for hours and hours and hours and hours. And I was like, oh, shit, okay, obviously I was born with half a kidney or something like that. but I had an allergy test, I think, like in my 20s and I came up with yeast on there and I was sort of like, oh, would beer perhaps, you know, have something to do with this? And they're like, yeah, beer will have an effect on you. And then two other things happened. One was like I moved to Japan for a bit and their beers there are very, very clean. The best way I can put them is like they're in computer terms, their resolution on their pale ales is like, yeah, you know, everyone else is wandering around with an old beard Nokia playing snakes. They've like got the, you know, the massive dual monitor set up, like their beer is a infinite resolution and it is crisp and clean. And I could get that down. And that wasn't a problem. The other thing I noticed was that when I was a bit older, I started getting into things like Jägermeister a bit more.
The dangerous medicine.
But the good medicine. Like the first Berserker tour of the UK was sponsored by Jägermeister.
Oh, yes.
So we really got into it like hardcore there, especially they were giving us a couple of bottles, you know, and sort of like a bunch of test tubes and we were supposed to fill up the test tubes and hand them out. Of course, we didn't do that. We just drank the entire bottle ourselves. they should know better. But after that, you know, they've definitely made their money back on me. I've got a crippling addiction to Jägermeister now. I love it. But I noticed that once I moved over onto the spirits or the aperitifs, that I could have as much, if not more, than most people when it came to that. But on beer, no, I tap out after like one or two. So that's my alcohol journey right there.
Very interesting. You covered it all, and I love it. Now I want to hear about the soundtrack of your youth. When you're growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the music? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Good question. God, it's a bit of a mix. My mum, I remember she got just so frothy over Neil Diamond's Hot August Night.
Yeah.
Which is a bit creepy if you've seen the album cover of that. Like he's in this like jumpsuit, sweating all over the place.
My dad loves it.
He looks like he's in mid-orgasm, just like it's so gross. But my dad had quite the collection. Like I remember he had the Doors, LA Woman there. There was a fair bit of ELO, which is, yeah. I think his mates were the ones with the really good taste in music, and he'd kind of like, tap them. But he had a bit of country as well. I remember there was some Kenny Rogers, a bit of Willie Nelson as well. I still like, hearing a bit of Willie Nelson, like if the weather's really cold and there's an open fireplace somewhere, it's a great combination. And Roger Waters as well. Like he really went for that. As we got on a bit, I think my mum started getting more into the classical stuff. I remember in around 89 or so, the three tenors doing their their live show at the Forum in Rome. We were starting to get into that. And then there was, I remember my sister as well. She had a friend at school, Amanda Rogers, who is now known as Portia de Rossi. And she'd been off in Europe, like I think doing some modeling during school. And when she came back, she brought back a bit of vinyl for my sister, who I don't know if she really got into it or not. But like I remember one of them was Mars, Pump Up the Volume. And that has an amazing B-side on it. They actually did this noise track called Anatina, First Time I See She Dance. And it's so noisy, but it's on the back of this like this club, vinyl LP, EP that was like making the rounds over in London at the time. So that was probably my first exposure to noise. And then she came back with stuff like the Murray Ball One Night in Bangkok, anything that was getting played on a dance floor. So that's what I was getting started off on.
That's amazing. And love Portia de Rossi, love Arrested Development. But more of you, I want to hear about your first show. Do you remember the first show that you went to go see?
Oh, damn. Look, there might be some little show or concert or something somewhere that I've forgotten, but the first real show I remember, and especially the first metal one, was, and unfortunately it's still the best one by far, it was Morbid Angel and their 1992 tour of Australia. And that was when they still had Richard Brunel on guitars. They had just released Blessed Are the Sick. And there's a lot of guys like my age or thereabouts who, in Australia, you still wander about going, shit, man, that is still the best show we've ever seen. That was when their manager, Gunter Ford, was mixing them, and they were just out of their fucking skulls on drugs and Satan and well-practiced and young and healthy and mental. Yeah, that's dude, that was such a kick. Oh, my God.
Australia has such a vibrant metal scene. I wonder how many bands were formed just from that one night.
Actually, we've got quite a few bands, and especially back then we had an amazing scene, and that scene was already together. Mm-hmm. Well and truly before Morbid Angel landed. But what the great thing was is that when they played with them, and they all sort of like got a good look at what professionalism was, what it is to have a crew, what it is to put on a show, to be performers. Australians are very laid back, reticent, and quite often in gigs that translates with, instead of them going, "Oh, rah, I want to see you guys crush this place, let's fucking kill everyone," rah, it's quite often like some guy shuffling his feet, looking at the floor, going, "I'm just going to play a song. If you don't want to listen to it, that's fine." this kind of gave him a little bit of a taste of what it's like to really go out there and back yourselves and have a little bit of arrogance and, you know, bring a bit of hormones to the whole thing.
You got to have some swagger.
Yeah.
If you don't believe in yourself, no one else will believe in yourself. You got to get into character. Do you remember your first time on stage? Was it playing bass? Was it vocals? Was it both? What was going on?
I can probably give actually two answers to that one. First time playing a show to anyone was probably back at high school. It was with some friends playing at a benefit at school, and we did a Morbid Angel cover. I was on bass. Yeah, I was on bass and vocals. We did Visions from the Dark Side. Dude, it was so funny. Like I went to a very posh school, and I think we were about the only light metal guys in the entire school. And we were also the ones that went up to see like the Morbid Angel gig. And that just ruined our lives right there. Is, you know, you go to this school and you come away like, you know, being a politician or a prime minister or a king or a silk or a queen's council, you know, kind of thing. And I was en route to like do law, and I walked away from that gig going, I don't give a shit about school. All I want to do is like be standing up on stage with the bass, like just going, raw, you know, just laying some Satan down at everyone. So anyway, we played this show at school, and I just remember everyone's faces just kind of looking at us as if like, you know, as if I just dropped my dacks and bent over and started giving birth to puppies out of my asshole or something like that. They were just, they weren't impressed. I think there was about five people headbanging, and we didn't do too bad with it. My first real show was with Berserker, and that was on guitar and vocals. And that was at a metal festival in Melbourne called Croydon Metal Fest. And it was a bit of a mess, but I just remember at the time, like I thought we were king of shit because we got signed to Earache and the album had come out and stuff. And there was these local bands who are also, you know, on the make. There was a band called The Wolves and Frankenbock, and they'd already been touring Australia and, you know, making their own moves and stuff. And I was like, yeah, we're competition for them because, like, we're on Earache and we're a Berserker, you know, kind of thing. And we opened that day, and they were the bands that closed it. And I was nervous as hell, like, before that show. And, you know, we kind of battled through it, didn't do that great a job of it, but they just absolutely nailed their gigs, and the crowd reaction and connection was fantastic. And they came off, and as they came off, there was a party that night, and they're already at the party like planning the next three or four shows, and I just saw that big gulf between us and them, and was just like, oh shit, man, we've still got quite a way to go,
which is important to learn. You got to get there. You got to play those gigs. You got to realize that you're not ready so that you can prepare to become ready. It's an important lesson that you need to learn. You can't learn it until you're in that position. There's no perfect plan. You have to, it's these life lessons as a musician, as with many things.
Hello out there.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McLean. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hayden, Backstreet's magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.
Let's talk about Werewolves. You guys have been extremely busy. I think it's just baffling how much material you guys have written, you guys have put out, you guys are going to put out. You have two albums out already. You have a third one that's recorded. I've heard whispers that it's even a fourth one is recorded. The Haley brothers are machines.
You
got David on the drums. You got his brother doing the studio work. You got Matt Wilcock. David and Matt would play together in a Bramelin. Talk to me about Werewolves, not how it all came together, but I'm really, really interested in this work ethic. Being in Cryptopsy, it's sometimes a struggle to get product out, to get songs together, to get them released, to even get together to write them. How the hell did you guys do this?
Look, I think the makeup or the members of the band or a band are really important. Like, it's one thing to be a talented guy who can like write a tune and maybe likes playing a show or whatnot, but I think that to really get a lot of output happening, to get a lot of recording happening, you kind of have to love the grind, you know, not just the bit where you're coming up with songs, which is like, you know, the fairy dust and the sprinkles and the cherry on top. No, you got to love pumping that fudge out. You got to love the bits where you're having to like send the videos to the other guys, you know, the bits where you're shaping lyrics and sending it and just like going, all right, what things can I get away with? Like, what am I going to have to edit out? The bits where you how to have those unfun conversations where you're talking about the business side of it, like what's the split going to be this time? Like, have we got the ISRC codes? You got to love all of it. And there's only so much of it that's fun. Now, we're really lucky. Matt is a man of few hobbies, and playing guitar would be hobby 1, 2, and 3. But also he's, you know, it's pretty inspiring to see. The guy has kind of shaped his life in the best possible way to make and record music. By that I mean sort of like when he practices playing guitar, or I think when he's coming up with his riffs, whenever I stay over at his place, he's always the first one out of bed. He's pretty disciplined. And he'll watch TV, you know, he'll have breakfast, have a coffee and watch TV for like an hour or two in the morning. But he'll be watching it standing up and just like practicing.
I love it.
and he'll either do scales, but I think like you might have this, everyone has their own way of writing music, but I think it's really good if you're sitting in front of the TV when you write music and your brain is focused on that, and then I think your subconscious is working over the instrument. And I think you come up with a lot of good stuff there. His place is set up so that if he needs to record a riff, can do that like no problems whatsoever. On top of that, like I think a lot of guys also kill their passion for music by involving themselves too much in the studio and recording side of it. I think it's a very rare individual who is good at both the studio and also the playing. And I've seen plenty of guys like, you know, drift away from music because they got too wrapped up in like collecting sound cards or VST plugins or the latest software or all that kind of crap. Matt's got like the minimum required setup, and when it comes time to do an album, he just takes like, you know, raw stems and hands it to a studio and gets them to do that work.
The reamping and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so he's got like what I call a frictionless kind of setup of like there's nothing that he's not having to step out of his way to do any part of it, recording, the coming up, the practice, any of that. Dave has no life except metal.
He's a hard worker. I've toured with him. I've toured for him, having him bring Cryptopsy to Australia and New Zealand. It was flawless. And now throughout the pandemic, I've heard, or I know, that he's turned his whole touring business into a merch business, because he was even doing that when bands would come in. The merch was all taken care of. You don't have to bring your merch. The merch is already printed. It's all organized. Dave is a freaking genius when it comes to this. So hats off to him. So yeah, keep going, sir.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, he enjoys playing and enjoys practicing as well. Whereas
fucking good.
Yeah, like we both know just because someone plays or is good at an instrument, it doesn't necessarily mean that they like spending their spare time, like, you know,
that's
getting at it. So that's a really good quality. But also, you know, Matt's really good at the music side, pumping out music. Dave is really good at the business side. So there's a lot of, you know, we've all got a lot of experience, but like quite often in a chat, like, you know, Dave will have the answers to any questions that we've got.
When you're that guy that's bringing in every freaking band or just about every band, you have every contact. So Dave definitely knows what's going on in the industry.
Yeah. So, you know, for example, with that little bit of work that we did like earlier in the week, you know, we had to get in contact with like a few other bands. And now for me, I'd be like, oh, shit, do I just do an internet search for him or something? And Dave's like, just leave it to me. And a day or two later, he's back going, yep, we're all good.
So, I love him.
So, yeah, he's handy, but he doesn't sort of like begrudge that role of, you know, handling the business side. But we all have a sort of like enough experience that we can all chip in each other's wheelhouse as well. No one is fully left alone, like doing all the studio or recording. No one's fully left alone, you know, doing the business. It's a good little unit. Like, both those guys work hard, love working. I'm the slackest one out of all of us. I can say that right now. If I've got a talent that I bring to it, it's probably just being able to talk massive amounts of shit and really just get elbow deep in sort of the promo game.
It's incredible. The amount of lyrics that you've had to write, I would be daunted. Riffs repeat themselves. Lyrics do not. So, and your lyrics are quite aggressive. And you know, what a time to be alive. Killer album title. Surprised no one else came up with it, but you did. Just very violent, angry. Where does it come from? Does it stem through humor? Is it a bit of dark cynicism?
Look, it's a bit of all of the above, to be honest. And look, I think Matt kind of set the tone for what he wanted from the band. And so he was kind of like, before the first album, the Dead Are Screaming, like he was giving me just keywords, like, you know, just to, for the vibe, for the feeling. So he was like, you know, bestial, you know, violence, you know, over the top, don't be subtle, you know, be as ridiculous as you want. And, you know, It's cool. It's not all that often that, like, you know, a band or an outfit just goes, go for it, dude. Don't worry.
Are there times that you've written stuff that they said, no, it's too much?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like,
share those with us.
look, I'll share it with you, but, you know, you got to be careful these days. I'll preface it just by saying that When I write any lyrics, I make an absolute point of crossing the line. Like, I've got a moral compass of my own, and I do my best to turn that moral compass off and write down stuff that is unpleasant and uncomfortable. So having said that, like, the things that normally they edit out or cross out is I'll be talking about fascism or genocide. And quite often it's not so much the content that they pick up, it's keywords. I turn the brain off when I do it, and I rely on Matt and Dave, but also like prosthetic, to be able to tell me when I've come up with something that's going to, you know, cause trouble. So, for example, like the album title for like album number two wasn't originally What a Time to Be Alive. It was Hate Speech, which, you know, I thought encapsulated like the content perfectly, and a, you know, tight little punchy title. They're the ones who came back just going, no,
you don't want that googled, and then you guys keep popping up. Yeah
it's kind of like, you know, Werewolves Pebble Hate Speech, and it's like, no, we don't. And they're like, yes you do, you called your fucking album after it. And we'll be like, you got us there.
so sharp eye at prosthetic there, keep going. Yeah,
I think that one was more Dave than anything. Like, you know, from his time as a booking agent, he's run afoul of, like, people cancelling shows. And they also live over in Melbourne as well, which is a very progressive town, not progressive city, I should say. So they've got more experience with the real unhinged kind of progressive element, which are really into, like, cancelling and banning stuff. I kind of live in a little bit of more of an old fashioned, smaller city where it's not quite such a thing. So you don't have to worry about that as much, but they kind of like run into it on a regular basis. So, or see it around them. So like, they're more aware than I am. other stuff that has been, there was that song of that little project we did where, like, you know, I think the chorus in it, I had a line saying fascists whisper in our hearts or something like that. I had to change it to evil whispers in our hearts, which is basically the same thing. But again, like, you know, as well as anyone else, that you get just people out there where they're not looking at the content or where you're coming from or the context even. They just see that keyword and they're like, yay, I've got a target. I've got a target today. And before you know, like, they're able to whip up, you know, enough people on Twitter about, like, the pop, you know, the size of the population of Australia and just send them after you. And they can do a lot of damage in a small time.
It's actually beneficial that you are at an older age when you're writing material like this so that you can look at it from a mature perspective, so that you can, as an artist, accept that your bandmates and that the label is going to edit your lyrics.
Oh, yeah. And it's also, you know, I've known Matt now for, what, the last 20 years, and we've toured the world together. You know, we've moved over to England at the same time. And, you know, I've known Dave on and off through the years, again, for about 20 years. Like, he did a tryout for Berserker, like, back in the days. That was for the 2001 tour, like, with Dying Fetus and Gorguts and Skinless. We wanted him on that one, but I think he was just starting uni or something like that, so he couldn't do it. That would have been awesome. But I know the guys. I've known them for long enough. I don't have too many hang-ups myself, so if they turn around and go, we can't do that, we shouldn't say that, yeah, I'm willing to go with it. I don't want to grind this. I don't want to be the one that grinds this band to a halt.
No, I don't think that there is stopping Werewolves. You guys are a machine. Have you guys performed live?
No.
Is that something that will happen? Granted, if you're allowed to.
Yeah, look, we want to do it. We want album 3 to come out, which I don't think anyone's going to be waiting too long for that. Probably the problem that we've really got right now, it's more down to just COVID being a thing than anything. Like, at the moment, you know, I'm booked in to do shows with the Amanta, and I'm on bass and backup vocals for that. It's such an easy gig compared to the other bands I've done. And I'm happy to do that because, as harsh as this sounds, like, they're the ones, like, booking the shows and doing the planning. They just tell me where I need to be and when. So, you know, if a gig gets cancelled, like, we were going to be playing, it was going to be so good. I'm going to tell you about this. We were supposed to be playing at this festival, not this weekend, but the next. Okay, so you know how in Germany you've got Wacken?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So this one, I think it's some black fellas, some Aborigines in around Alice Springs, and it's a really Aboriginal town, so I don't even know if they are, but, like, in reference to the area, they've called the festival Blacken. And
yes, I've seen this, actually, yes.
And the lineup is fantastic, or it was fantastic. It's, like, I shouldn't say the festival's cancelled, it's just postponed, so they're searching for some more dates at the moment, but you know, when that was cancelled, I was like, God, that sucks, but, you know, I could sort of see that coming a bit. Whereas if that's our own band, if that was Werewolves, we'd just be gutted. And you know, I can get by with maybe just doing one rehearsal a week or a fortnight for the Amenta. For Werewolves, it is like...
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're a vocalist, so you know the deal, man. I don't give myself much of a break, like, on that material. There's no solos. I'm going to have to, I don't know how I'm going to do it, to be honest, but.
You didn't do it live, like, one takes. You do in the studio, or did you do line by line, section by section?
I changed it up. Like, some bits were, like, line by line, and I'd record each type of vocal sort of separately. So I'd do all the highs in one sesh, all the lows one sesh. Well, I did it all in one sesh. I just broke the one sesh up into, you know, three sessions. Oh, yeah, no Werewolves vocal recording has taken longer than one day.
Wow, the whole album?
Yeah.
Insane. Amazing.
Oh, it gets funnier. Like when I did What a Time to Be Alive, that was the last album I did before I had to go in for vocal surgery.
Really? Okay, we have to talk about this now. What happened? Yeah.
It's amazingly enough, it wasn't an injury. I had a papilloma, a wart, like on the vocal folds.
Okay.
Now I'd had that for a few years, so my voice was like degenerating more and more. And I first checked it out in 2016. Some old ENT, like ear, nose, throat doc, sort of like who would have been about 90 years old, you know, endoscoped me roughly via the nose, looked at it and went, "Oh, you have like vocal nodules, terrible vocal nodules, the worst nodules I've ever seen." Oh. And so I was like, "Oh shit. It's finally happened." And he's like, "You need to do voice training, voice therapy, and look after your voice and like that." So I did that. I did that hardcore, like, you know, no alcohol, stop smoking. Like, you know, I used to smoke a bit. Voice exercises just at the start of each and every day, let alone the start of any session. Warm liquids, constant hydration, vaporizers, like absolutely everything. I went to town. And it didn't get better, and it just kept getting worse. And finally in, I think, 2019, I went and had it checked out. I moved away from Melbourne. I moved interstate here to Adelaide, and I had the best ENT in the state check it out. It was much younger, and he had some good equipment, and it was great. He, like, got the camera up my nose so I could see video in real time, like the vocal folds in the throat. So he was getting me to, like, do different vocals or sounds and stuff, and I could watch, like, the folds opening and closing.
So cool.
Yeah. And he goes, "Look, you don't have nodules at all. You've got, like, a little wart right here. It's right where the vocal folds try to close." So I was like, "Ah, shit, is that a problem?" He goes, "Nah, it's just like a day surgery in and out. Like, we'll have it out. You just need to shut up for about a week and then take it easy for a month." And
you have to be quiet before the operation, have the operation, then recoup afterwards.
No, I could talk afterward, like beforehand, or make noises beforehand. Like I think I recorded that album a few weeks before I went in for surgery. But yeah, afterwards, then it's very much take it easy on your voice. But I could talk and sing, like, you know, after a week or two. It's just the death metal vocals have been like a slower move forward. Unfortunately, I think that bit where the papilloma was removed, that's exactly kind of where the callus forms as well for like the deeps. And so before, I used to like just be able to launch into that like it was some sort of launch pad. Now it's kind of like, it's not quite there, and I have to work around it, as I can feel it sort of like getting grislier and better. And there's other stuff I can do with my voice now I couldn't do before. But yeah, it's not quite the same. But yeah, I did that album. Like I was able to do death metal vocals, but I couldn't talk.
You couldn't speak at that point?
Nah.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I could kind of speak. It sort of sounded like this.
Wow.
And that was speaking, but yeah, if it was death metal vocals, it would be like, "Roar," you know, just it was full strength.
Just death metal vocals all the time. Yeah.
You know, I should have, eh?
Well, I'm glad that you're recuperated and you're back and everything is fixed and you're just going to keep killing it with werewolves. If you could do a release show, the first werewolves show, werewolves tour, don't keep it trapped to Australia. No disrespect to any bands from Australia, the UIs all rule, you know that I love you, but the perfect showcase for werewolves, what bands would be on that bill to put you in front of the perfect audience so you guys could become even bigger than you are now?
Marduk, preferably if they're like doing some sort of tour where they're just playing Panzer Division and nothing else. I mean, Dark Funeral, Mortician, just your dumbest, heaviest, stupidest fucking bands. Like, for some reason, people keep on going, "Oh, well, technical death metal." And I'm like, "No, we're not. Shut up." Like, we just play dumb. We're dumb guys playing dumb shit. That's our fucking logo, you know. But I think everyone kind of because I've seen a little bit of conversation out and about, like about who Werewolf should play with when it finally happens, and they're all naming these technical death metal bands, and I'm like, fuck no, don't do that. They'll blow us away. The problem is that, like, if we do play live, well, when we do play live, people, I think, will quite often see Dave in the lineup and be like, oh, let's get Psychroptic in, get Dave to do two sets and, like, you know, save a little bit of transport or accommodation money.
Dave's already thinking about it.
Dave's probably thinking no about it because it would be two savage sets. Like, but I'm like, no, don't put us on with them, man. They'll fucking blow us away, Jesus. I'm looking forward to when it's going to happen, and I reckon, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see something as early as, like, Feb, March, maybe next year. Once we're a little bit close to album 3 release date, I'm coming up with like a set list at the moment. Yeah, but really, I think the other two guys, they just need a week or two to break themselves in, but I'm going to have the real job out of everyone trying to do bass and all those vocals at the same time. So I've said to them, look, you know, I'll need a good 4 months heads up before we do any shows just to have a fighting chance of getting performance fit.
Oh, it's a workout. It's an absolute workout getting ready to perform extreme vocals, especially if you've never done them all together back to back while playing bass. It's
yeah.
You got your work cut out for you, but I know you could do it, Sam.
Thank you.
You don't like beer, but we're telling you don't like beer. Beer doesn't like you. Yeast doesn't like you. If you could make a Werewolves brew, what beer would it be? What style? What would you call it? And you could cheat and say that it's your own Jägermeister.
Satan. No, it would be. I reckon it'd be a black beer. Let's be honest. It'd be black and full of hate.
That sounds like that's a good beer title right there. Black and full of hate.
Yeah, actually, that would be. You know, I've been sort of against because like, there's a lot of bands doing. Well, not a lot of bands, only a couple of bands doing the beers, but there's a trend over here of bands doing hot sauce. And every now and then we'll have someone like go, hey, where was beer? Where was hot sauce? And I'm like, no. No. I don't want people gaining pleasure from our products. No. I think if we did a black beer and called it black and full of hate, then yeah, I think I'd be agreeable to that.
I think it's awesome. One last question. It probably does happen to you if you're into the spirits, but you know what you're doing. You're a mature man, but every once in a while it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
For a moment there, I thought, how often do you piss yourself? But my hangover cure.
Let me count. Yeah.
Look, I've had to change them. There was a really good one that you used to be able to get in England, and it was a sachet powder called Resolve. And you could just get it from WH Smith's over there, and that stuff was magic. Like, it didn't matter. So I'm a problem spewer when it comes to hangovers, and once I start, I'll go for about 2 days. Yeah, it sucks. So Resolve was brilliant. It would, within 10 minutes, take away the nausea.
You had to drink it afterwards, before, right before going to bed? So while you were hungover, or like a preemptive thing?
Yeah, no, it's, you'd have it while hungover because, you know, I wouldn't be sensible enough to, you know, take precautions.
Because some people, their hangover cure is planning for the hangover. So I wasn't sure if it was a preemptive. You know you're going to be hungover, so you take a Resolve. But no, it's you're already hungover, and then you make your trip down to the drugstore and you pick up that pack of Resolve.
No. I would. This is where I was slightly smart. I'd have usually a big box of about 20 stashed away in the apartment. So I'd crawl my sorry ass to like wherever they were stashed, usually in the bathroom. So nice and convenient, usually next to where I'm like chundering everywhere. And I'd mix myself up a glass of that, wait for 10 minutes close to a sink or toilet. And then once that 10 minutes was up, I knew I was going to be pretty good, crawl off to bed and, probably usually fall asleep. But look, they don't sell it anymore. So my hangover cure now, it comes from my grandma. It's dry ginger ale. Either dry ginger ale or ginger beer. And both the effervescence and also the ginger in that usually mean if you have a couple of slugs of that before too long, the nausea goes. And then you're back on your feet and able to get after it.
Amazing. Sam, thank you so much for taking the time talking to me about your life, music, and about craft beer and how craft beer makes you suffer, which is perfect for your lyrical theme. I just think it just encompasses the whole theme of the conversation. I love it. Everyone, please get ready for the new Werewolves. Go see them live when we can. Sam, this is a true pleasure. I am very stoked that I got to be a part of the new Werewolves, and I can't wait for everyone to hear it. A true pleasure. Cheers, Sam.
Cheers, dude. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the chat.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, did I ever have a blast connecting with Sam. He was super funny, super interesting. I am a huge fan of Werewolves. I think that they're just putting out some of the most pummeling, extreme music that is coming out of Australia to date. I really, really am super stoked that I had a chance to be on an upcoming track. It's a banger of a track, and I can't wait to showcase it to all of you. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You could do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's VOXANDHOPS.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that is happening in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all the details for any episodes which I've dropped. If I've been a guest on someone else's podcast, you got the links to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is curated by Jerry Monk, the Metal Architect himself, and is available on both Apple Music and Spotify. There is just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I would hate for you to miss a single thing, so please sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have one more episode coming up this Friday, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops hits.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.